What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to SaberSims DFS Office Hours. It is Thursday, May 19th of 2022. Thank you for tuning into the show here today. My name is Jordan. I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. DFS Office Hours is an open Q&A style show where your questions drive our conversation. We get questions in through email, support@sabersim.com. We get questions in through Slack, the Office Hours channel in Slack, and we get questions coming in live on YouTube chat. I mixed up the order of those a little bit here today. I'm used to my normal flow here, and I'm mixing it up on this Thursday here. My regular watchers are going to know something was a little bit different here. Of course, I should mention that the questions, the topics of the show are about how to use SaberSim, about how to beat DFS. I suppose if you want to talk about other stuff and we have some time, we can go where the questions go, but typically pretty DFS focused here. My dog making a bit of a cameo appearance here, taking a nap on the floor today. So those of you watching on YouTube get a little bit of a special appearance from the dog here today. A big welcome to everybody that's listening to this show on all of your favorite podcast hosting outlets, Spotify, Apple, Google Podcasts, Amazon. There's a few others I am forgetting as well. We are live now with the podcast version of this show up on all major podcast outlets. So anyway, excited to dive in here a little bit today. I know I had teased earlier this week an update coming to the app. That is still coming. We are pushing to get that out. I am not going to be demoing that, unfortunately, here on this very stream today. Hopeful maybe that we can do a little bit of that here tomorrow, but we are pushing to get that app update out. Come with a handful of new features and improvements. It streamlines the entry editor and late swap experience significantly. Some solid improvements to the quick swap tool, especially for baseball. I've been using quick swap a ton this year. It makes quick swap a lot easier. Adds the ability to send exposures and projections from one build back to the home screen, which is pretty cool. So all kinds of cool stuff. A good just overall front end facelift to the app as well. So a nice update there. Hoping to get that out here shortly, cautiously optimistically, the next 24 hours, I would say. But anyway, some good questions in front of us here today. A couple questions about the ownership projections for baseball, how quickly those update, when they update, and also umpire sims for baseball. So should probably be two pretty quick questions to get us started off with here today. So if you have questions for me, fire away now. I think these first couple questions will probably get us through the first 10 or 15 minutes of the show, and then we can go wherever from there, wherever you guys have questions, whatever you want to talk about. Strange day for the MLB DFS streets here. I think maybe has something to do with the maybe not. I don't know. I was thinking maybe it had something to do with the PGA Championship starting today. I know sports kind of don't, and we also have basketball and hockey, and sports don't always want to compete with each other that day. I guess sports don't always want to compete with each other all at the same time like that. But there's a lot of baseball games to play. I'm always upset we only have 8 baseball games today, right? Let's get a big slate going. But we'll have one tomorrow. Anyway, 3-game night slate today. The main slate's already in progress. Let's talk about some questions here. Let's stop rambling. Enough is enough. We'll start with this question from Neil. And he asked, can you go over when ownership projections update for MLB? Does it update with each new sim? I feel like I'll see a sim complete, and then 5 to 10 minutes later, ownership will update slightly, but it seems like it's separate from the sim. And then he followed that up with another comment, some clarification, which is always helpful for me answering these things here, and said, to kind of clarify why I'm asking this, we got all of our lineups in over an hour before lock today. I'm wondering if it's still good to build at that point or if it should wait for closer to lock for ownership to update. Good question. So I checked with Matt here earlier, and our ownership projections will update every 5 minutes if a sim has run in the final hour before lock. Earlier in the day, we take longer between doing new ownership builds just because it's generally not very important to precisely update for ownership every 5 minutes like it is following up into lock. So ownership should run every 5 minutes after in the hour before lock if there's been a sim that has run. With that, Neil is absolutely correct here that that is not completely lockstep with sims. So ownership can update a little bit after sims update. But I think even actually more important here is that because our ownership model does require a couple other data sources, basically we pull together this industry aggregate of how we think that the field at large is going to think about the slate and then use that when we build the lineups that ultimately end up forming the ownership projections. We can get delayed if other data sources are delayed updating. So there are some, you know, protections built in on our end to make sure that we get usable ownership projections up in time for lock. But sometimes if news has broken and it's taking a bit of time for ownership projections to update, it can possibly be because of that reason. On the practical side, I would say, you know, for me personally, when the lineups all come out, they're all confirmed. You're looking at green check marks for all of the different teams on the slate here, right? I think at that point, it's perfectly fine to use the ownership projections as they are. I think unless there is other news that breaks that would otherwise affect the projections, right? Somebody gets scratched, a starting lineup changes, something like that. I think at that point, the ownership projections are good to go. I built my lineups like an hour early today for the early slate or the main slater, the early slate on FanDuel, the main slate on DraftKings, and just use the ownership projections as they were, not expecting another significant change. I think if you want to, you know, maybe be a little bit more precise there, you can wait until the final 15, 20, 30 minutes before lock if you have the time to do that and want maybe that kind of like last final bit of ownership dialing in that may occur there. But it's not something that I would ever expect significant changes once all the starting lineups have been confirmed. Of course, keep in mind, ownership projections do not update after lock. That's a common question. So if there are scratches after lock, the ownership won't update. Gets pretty tricky trying to project how many people are going to late swap and what lineups even can late swap and that kind of thing. So we typically will just lock in the ownership projections there. So, but cool. Good question. All right, let's keep it going here. We had another one from JB here. Or not another one from JB, a question from JB, from Brad here. And he said, when the Sims run with the note of umpire change, is that a cause or a need on our end to rebuild after they run? I typically don't, personally. So the umpire thing is interesting. I know there were been some questions in Slack over the past week. So the umpire crew for a new series, right, when two teams are just playing each other for a new, just kick off a new series for the first time, the first umpire in that game, that news typically comes out pretty late. Right, we don't know who the umpire is going to be in the first game of a series, typically until pretty close to when first pitch is. I think it ends up actually being like 20 or 30 minutes before first pitch. So you often will see these umpire sims running right up against lock or right before the start of certain games. Umpires are taken into account in our model. That does affect things. They have a minor impact overall on the model. I am typically not rebuilding lineups, rerunning things, rerunning builds, redoing research builds, things like that, purely to capture umpire sims. If there is news that breaks and a starting lineup changes or a player gets ruled out, I will rebuild then and take advantage of any umpire sims that have run since then. But I'm willing to basically, you know, if I've gotten everything dialed in and 5 minutes, 10 minutes before lock an umpire sim runs, I will typically just kind of let it go. I don't expect it to ever have a massive impact on the projections overall. But that is kind of why they run. That is also why they run late. And again, that's only for, you'll only see that for the first games in the series generally. Otherwise we generally know who's going to be the umpire. So if I remember correctly, there's an umpiring crew that will generally umpire the full series and they rotate around the home base. And the home base umpire is the one that has the significant impact on projections based on that ump's tendencies. So, cool. Good question. Richie said, the other day when Judge hits two home runs, I noticed he was up to 50% owned in some of my GBPs. Is that a great spot to fade him? Or was it just too good of a spot for him? It was almost certainly a good idea to fade him, I would say. 50% ownership hitter. Anytime you got a hitter like that, getting to just massive ownership on a slate like that, I think that's just unfortunate, right? That's the worst. The 50% on batter hitting two home runs, it's like that, it just kills you. But it is what it is. I think the right move is generally to fade in that situation. We can just click. I mean, like, so tonight, three game night slate, right? Staring at a projecting a 42% owned leadoff Dalton Varsho, right? And it's like, do I fade him? Do I play him? What do I do? I think one thing that always helps here, among other tools, is to just click on one of these guys' names and remember what their range of outcomes looks like, right? If everybody's fallen in love with Varsho, and maybe it's not Varsho, maybe it's Alvarez or Contreras or some of these guys, right? Sometimes you end up with the perfect storm of a big name bat a guy that people like to play on a good team against a bad pitcher who's also been like hitting the ball really well recently. And you get those, like, it's kind of been Judge lately, right? He's been hitting really well. The Yankees are a popular team. They're at the top of the standings. It's easy to click on Judge's name. He's been a little underpriced. He projects well, and you get these, like, even on a main slate, even on a slate with plenty of games, he's like 40% owned, right? You come in here and you click his name, and it will remind you of why it is almost always to your benefit to fade those crazy high owned batters, right? We'll click on any of these guys. Varshos was a little bit better, right? 27% chance of basically scoring 0 to 3 points. 0 to 6 is like 50% of his outcomes, right? Absolutely, absolutely makes sense there to fade. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to fade him in every lineup, and it doesn't mean based on the rest of the context of the slate and where what contest you're playing and where your ownership fade slider is that, like, you, SaberSim, will take you in that direction 100% of the time. But I would almost certainly, almost always be fading a 50% owned batter pretty aggressively in a typical main slate. If you are interested in kind of taking one step further, since we have time to do it, I think that is a good opportunity. You know, actually, I'll show you a couple things since I don't see a ton of other questions coming in. So we'll address this from a couple other directions. So first is, obviously contest does matter here, right? And the amount of ownership you want to fade if you're playing a 500 man single entry in a 3-game slate like we have tonight is a lot different than if you're trying to take down the big 150 max GPP. So I do think another way, you know, if you're unsure on a given player of how you want to handle that, I think it can be helpful to just run a test build like for that particular contest size and see what you get, right? We can see, you know, how much of these high projected, high, very highly owned hitters am I getting if I'm building for a single entry or if I'm building for a 20 max, because it's going to change, right? And the optimal strategy for those contests is also going to change. You don't need to fade ownership as heavily if you're playing the smaller field stuff. So for example, you know, let's see on a 3-game slate here, like tonight, let's take a look. So what are we doing with these high projected on bats? So almost a full fade of Varsho and Alvarez, which are the two highest projected on hitters, getting to a little bit of Contreras, Devers, right? But, you know, 3-game slate for a 10 to 50K, 20 max kind of contest. I think this is a typical, you'll see this pretty commonly, right? Is pretty aggressive fades of those really chalky bats. If you want to take this one step further, I think this is always a good opportunity to use one of my trusty research builds, right? So in this case, what we're basically going to do is we're gonna set build settings here that basically have the effect of simulating the slate out, right? So correlation's off, ownership fade is off. We're gonna put sim variance to 10. That means single game simulation. We're gonna use a single game simulation for every single game on the slate. Every single time we build a lineup, right? We're essentially going to simulate the slate once, build the optimal lineup for that slate sim, and then move on to the next lineup with a different individual slate sim and do that 1,500 times. And what we can get out of this is we can actually figure out what is the percent chance of some of these highly owned players actually making the optimal. And this, I think, is kind of a more analytical way of answering some of these questions for yourself, right? Let's go see. So we know we're projecting Varsho at 42% owned. We're projecting Alvarez at 35% owned, Contreras 35% owned. Let's see how often just simulating the slate 1,500 times, those guys are actually making the optimal. And I think this can be another really useful tool here as well to answer these questions for yourself. Does it actually, you know, you can look at the player distribution and I think it's something kind of, you get an intuitive sense of what to do there with that. You can run test builds and SaberSim will kind of tell you, here's some optimal lineups, here's some good strategies for this kind of contest. And I think you can also run this research build here and see, you know, on an analytical level, how often are these guys actually getting there, right? And let's look. So Varsho, most likely player on the entire slate to end up in the optimal lineup, most likely batter, right? Happens 30% of the time, but he's 42% owned, right? Alvarez, also a fairly likely player to end up in the optimal lineup. He is the sixth most likely player to end up in the optimal, but he's owned in 33% of the lineups, right? So that's kind of why these fades make sense. Nobody's denying that these well-projected, possibly underpriced hitters hitting in good spots are good plays, right? Ownership agnostic, Varsho's the best hitter on the slate. but he is over-owned relative to his actual expectation of success. Therefore, we end up fading him in most larger field GPPs, right? The research build, I think another thing, you know, another way of thinking about the research build, and I know I talk about this often, I run these all the time. I think they're probably one of my favorite things to do with SaberSim, but the research build can often help explain to you why you are seeing what you're seeing when you run your build for your contests, right? So if you're ever looking, if you ever run a build for the slate and maybe you don't have a ton of time or you just kind of have to take what you're getting out of there and you're like, why am I stacking up, you know, who we were stacking up the Mariners, right? You know, if you want an explanation of why was I getting Mariner stacks, look at the players that are more likely to be optimal than their ownership projection, right? Suarez, Frazier, JP Crawford, right? We're also getting some Ranger stacks and some Cub stacks, but like the biggest combination of players that are the players that are the best combination of high raw probability of ending up in the optimal and also under-owned relative to their expectation are mostly Mariners here, right? And I guess maybe a little bit of Texas, too. So now let's go back to our build, right? A research build will basically explain to you why you are getting what you're getting in the build. So, and allow you a little bit more, you know, maybe we bump up Texas, actually, you know? I don't know. We're going off on a tangent now, but Texas looks kind of interesting based on the research build. I maybe bump up Texas a little bit there. Anyway, cool. That was a question about should I fade Judge in the spot where he hit two home runs that we kind of took a little bit further. I think that's okay. We got plenty of time on today's stream here. Richie, let me know if that helps out. I guess the short answer here again, I'm almost always fading a 50% owned hitter. Just end of story. But yeah. So, and sometimes you lose. Sometimes that happens. Sometimes the field gets 40 points out of Judge in the outfield spot and you lose that day. So. HC said, is putting the ownership slider down a few notches or even at neutral good or bad when running builds? These are always interesting questions. So if you are just asking just like, you know, from what's the best ownership fade setting, then I would leave it where it is by default, right? Like if you don't have kind of like another reason for wanting to change it, I would leave it where it is. Because and I know I say this all the time too, like my regular audience here is going to be like, oh, here he goes again with the slider thing. But we have put in a lot of work to set these defaults where they are with purpose, right? We've done a lot of back testing to make sure that these are in a good spot. So if your question is, where should I put the ownership fade slider? I would probably say, put it where it goes. Put it at the default value for your contest. Now, it doesn't mean you can never change these around if you have a reason to do it, right? So a good reason to pull the ownership fade slider down lower would be if you were doing other things in your process to account for ownership, right? If you were adjusting projections on step one to, on the projection side, fade the chalky guys or bump up some of the guys that you thought were under-owned. Or maybe you're setting a stacking rule that's forcing a stack of all of the lowest projected teams, right? The getting off the chalk by setting a stacking rule. Then I think you can justify pulling back on the ownership fade slider because you've already accounted for some of that naturally in your other parts of your process. So I wouldn't arbitrarily just say, I'm going to do the same thing I've always been doing, but now I'm going to turn ownership fade off because the ownership fade slider has value. But if you have parts of your process that otherwise capture the effects of ownership, I have no problem turning it down. So Brad says, not so much about a how-to, but about SaberSim. Do you guys have someone that specializes in each sport and in turn makes SaberSim stronger in one sport compared to another? And how would you rank the sports from SaberSim? We definitely have kind of individual areas of expertise, I guess, amongst the team or different individual sports that people are interested in. So yeah, I think there's a bit of a spectrum. There's even like some contest type differentiation there. I had Chris on last year around this time, actually, who came on and talked a little baseball showdown strategy with me, just because that's a contest type that he's played a lot of and has had some success in, not even just baseball specific, but kind of contest specific there. So yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a lot of us all play at least a lot of the major sports, baseball, basketball, football, all pretty popular. And then I think there's kind of a breakdown from there for some of the other sports. I play a lot of golf DFS. I enjoy golf DFS. Eric, one of our data scientists, is really big into college sports. So he's going to have a big role in getting up our college sports support over the summer here. Will, obviously, killer at the esports Counter-Strike scene. There's definitely a spectrum of different people's interests in different sports and things like that. So, and then how would I rank the sports from SaberSim? I think this is always interesting because it's not so much about like ranking our models. You also have to, you know, place things in the context of the DFS landscape where, you know, you have sports where I think there are sports that sims naturally lend themselves better to than I think there are sports where you're dealing with a sports where you have a more beatable game because of different ways that the sport plays from a DFS standpoint. And then you have DFS sports that have a very soft field, right? So like, I'll give you kind of some examples. So I think baseball is a very good example. Well, let's compare baseball and football, I guess. So let's just do a couple examples. So high correlation, high variance sports, I think in general lend themselves very well to sims, right? You have the bigger the problems with average projections become, the more theoretical edge I think there is in a sport. So baseball is a really good example of that. Average projections are pretty useless. They mean very little for a hitter in particular. It's a high correlation sport. So optimizing just for average projection alone wouldn't account for correlation. It lends itself very well to sims, right? We also have just a very good baseball model. We do a good job of simulating the game of baseball, right? Then the other standpoint, the other question there, though, is I guess like the contest softness, right? Where, you know, there's a lot of comparisons to football there, which is also a high variance, high correlation sport, but you have a much softer field, right? The field in baseball, I think, is generally getting a little bit sharper year to year, stacking a little bit more, playing a little bit more sharply. Whereas in football, you have this like big recreational casual field that plays football DFS every single year that doesn't even essentially really know the basics, right? So while I think, you know, I would actually probably say that just down to pure accuracy that I might, our baseball model might be a little bit better than our football model. It's probably outweighed by just a massively softer field that I think your theoretical ROI and anybody's theoretical ROI in football is probably way higher than like any other sport. Hockey is actually another good example all the way on the other side, right? Also a high correlation, high variance sport, but you have these very small lobbies with a very sharp hockey DFS players taking up a ton of equity in the contest. I think hockey DFS, even though it is also high correlation, high variance, can be kind of hard to beat. Another example, all in the other direction, right? Golf DFS, especially for a major week, we have this big influx of recreational money where the field is probably overall very soft, right? Pretty beatable. But I think golf DFS is one of the hardest sports from a theory standpoint to beat. There's basically no correlation. We have correlation this week because of weather, but there's very little correlation. The projections are all very close together. It's difficult to just get an edge by just being kind of more right on a particular golfer. You're basically playing for like very thin, in my opinion, you're trying to exploit very thin margins of inefficient ownership in golf DFS. And even if you have a very soft field overall, I think your expectations of a long-term ROI in golf should be lower just because the edge is smaller, right? So I don't know. Like overall, I ranking the sports gets kind of tough. And that doesn't even say anything about like your actual own value added yourself, right? Like obviously, you know, somebody that pays a ton of attention to NHL might be able to, you know, get squeeze out a ton of extra juice and dominate the NHL lobby with a tool like SaberSim, even if they maybe were just an average baseball player, not really paying attention to baseball and things like that. So I don't know. I think the last time this question came up, I would probably say that like football is probably the softest sport, the easiest to kind of just win at. With not adding a lot of additional value, then I think NBA and baseball are both close. And then I think there's probably kind of a spread from there of getting into more of the niche sports. So, but interesting question. Always a fun one to think about. Yeah, good question. Drummer Jack said, is the betting tab in the top left used for anything? It is, for now, still has access to our game bets, at least for NBA for the rest of the playoffs. It is being deprecated in the near future, like potentially the very near future. We are moving from a we're moving to a different model of our betting product. There are wait lists to join the MLB prop plan, which will be kind of a little bit more what our betting product will be in the future. What we used to do is basically we would leverage the simulations and you could kind of go in and, you know, see the betting dashboard or something like that, or put in a player and a stat and a line and we would tell you if it was a profitable bet. The problem is that it was highly functional and probably underpriced, to be completely honest, to anybody that could scrape it and calculate all of the bets very quickly. But to anybody trying to use it more manually, it was not very functional and not very reviewed, right? We want to, any bets that we are recommending in our app, we want to stand behind. We want to be putting our own money on that as well. And the old format for our betting plan just wasn't functional in that way. So we are moving towards a more curated kind of picks-based model, beginning with NBA, which is now wrapping up, and moving into baseball here. So we are hoping to get our baseball prop betting plan up and running here, I would say in the next few weeks. And if you want to join the waitlist to join that plan, we'll basically give out, you know, anywhere from 2 to 10 different recommended prop bets for that day based on our sims. And if you want to join the waitlist for that plan, just DM anybody on the SaberSim team, Ross, me, Chris, Ruben, in Slack. Or send us an email, support@sabersim.com, and we can get you added to the wait list there. But I believe this is actually probably going away. This button here is going away very, very soon. So Richie said, follow-up question. I've typically been fading chalky pitchers and often stacking against them, with depending on the situation, seems like a good strategy because of the leverage, but I just haven't been having a lot of success. Should I be playing more chalk or maybe just higher ownership lineups? Yeah, so, I mean, another good question. My answer here is, I guess, kind of similar here, in that, you know, first of all, we can click on a guy like Valdez, projected at 62.5% owned, right? And see that this tells immediately a very different story than what happened when we clicked on a hitter, right? Obviously, there are a lot of big floor situations for him. There are also ceiling outcomes, but most of Valdez's outcomes are around the mean, right? That doesn't mean he's always going to hit his mean outcome. But if we take from like 15 to 30 points ish, right, that's 18, 30, 40, 50, you know, about 50% of his outcomes happen within that window. And then probably another like 25, you know, you're shooting for a much, I guess if you were shooting for that particular pitcher to fail, it is a rarer outcome than any one given hitter. There's no problem with fading a popular pitcher. And there's no problem with stacking against a popular pitcher, right? I do that. I especially like to do that when we end up in a situation where they're like the chalky, like second starting pitcher, this chalky SP2, is just like not that great of a pitcher. I love doing that, but I think it's a little less viable on average than fading chalk bats. If you want to learn for yourself, right, does it make sense to do that? I think it is a good opportunity to run those test builds because a lot of that's going to be contest specific, right? It might be, you might be over leveraged. You might be hurting yourself more than you're helping yourself. If you're playing single entry, small field, 3 max kind of stuff and stacking against the chalky pitcher every night, right? Because you're going to be playing bats with a ton of leverage, but a pretty low overall chance of success. If you're playing top heavy 150 max kinds of builds, I think having some exposure at least to leverage directly against the chalky pitcher makes a lot more sense. And I think the easiest way to determine if on a given slate you should be building with one strategy or the other, I think you should, you know, look at the builds for that slate, right? And we can do things like, you know, let's see. So this is a build default settings 20 max 10 to 50k, right? Let's X Valdez out, right? We had 100% exposure, but let's X him out and see what happens, right? Well, that immediately takes us from lineups 1 through 20 to lineups ranked 137 to 232, right? So it's viable, but we make a significant jump down into our lineup pool to get there. And if we wanted to directly leverage against Valdez, right, we have a little bit of Texas exposure, but if we want 50% maybe, right, we're going to see another jump. So on a three-game slate like tonight, I would argue that this is a completely viable strategy for a 20 max 10 to 50K entrance. On a 12-game slate, in a similar size contest, you might find that there aren't enough lineups to do this. This isn't as viable of a strategy, right? I also think you can look at your research builds, right? And come over here and study these. And let's see. So Valdez is the most likely pitcher to be in the optimal lineup. He shows up in the optimal 55% of the time. He's projected to be 62.5% owned, right? Fading 62.5 percentage points of ownership kind of always just feels good, but you're not getting a ton of leverage on him here, right? Like he's actually not that inefficiently owned if you trust both of these numbers, right? Even Gallen, the kind of projected, I guess Valdez is kind of the projected chalky SP2. Gallen's kind of the projected chalky ace at 10-3 on a three-game slate. He's kind of efficiently owned, right? At pitching ownership actually seems to be pretty efficient. If you wanted to play like a super leverage play on the pitching side, I actually think you'd be better off just getting a little exposure to Glenn Otto and fading Astros bats based on where the Sims sit currently. So, you know, nothing wrong with taking stands like this in baseball, just because the ranges of outcomes are so wide, anything can happen and it's going to pay off massively when you're right. But I think it is contest specific and it's slate specific. So rather than saying, yes, this is a good idea or no, this is a bad idea, I'd experiment with running builds on default settings for your contests. See what kind of lineups you're getting. See what removing certain players from your pool, see what impact that has on the lineups that you end up playing, right? In terms of their ordinal ranking. And run your research builds and kind of look at this for yourself. I would say on tonight's slate, you know, I think it is easier to get leverage on the bats than it is on pitchers, right? Pitching ownership seems a little efficient to me. You know, you get negative 7.5 percentage points of leverage, but we're talking about the guy that's like pretty massively the most likely pitcher to be in the optimal. So I think, you know, it's a weird three-game slate again tonight, but I think the most interesting route to take on tonight's slate is to get off of Houston or to be under on Arizona and Houston and maybe Chicago and over on Boston, Seattle, and Texas. And to probably play the two pitchers that you're not stacking against, right? Because there's only like Boston. Let me pull this back up. Yeah, so being over on Boston, Seattle, and Texas, and if you're over on, if you have a Texas stack in one lineup, well, you're not going to have Valdez in that lineup probably. So maybe you've got like Gallen and Kirby, right? And then it's Valdez and Kirby when you're playing the Cubs a little bit more, and you get what I'm saying. So, but Brad said, I just want to point out how not fun the dime contests are. No excitement in taking it down. Don't get me wrong, but I like that. $10 isn't that exciting for first. When I enter the dimes, I typically only do it to just get additional action down on my top 20 lineups. I'm never like playing the dimes and I'm like, fingers crossed, I take this one down for me. I'm not bankroll shaming anybody either. But for me, I think most people that are playing the dime contest are just trying to get additional action at the under $3 range down on their top 20 lineups. Like one dime time, $10, whatever. But if you've got, you know, if you're paying attention, you can get into 10 of them over the course of the day. And then you're turning, you know, you're making another $100 anytime that one of those lineups at the top takes it down. So, but Ryan says, is there a good way to force it to create a pool of mega diverse lineups? I often find it asking me to make more lineups to meet my requests, and then I create more it can't meet exposures. Yeah. So the best way to force diversity is to increase your sim variance slider. On a three-game slate like tonight, it's going to likely be very high by default, but crank it up even higher, right? That is the best way to force diversity into your pool is increasing the sim variance slider, because it does so in a way that also increases your upside. Right? This increases your diversity by looking at a smaller set of simulations for each individual lineup, right? Up to a single game sim of every game on the slate at 10. So you are getting more diversity, but you are also adding more upside by looking at a thinner range of outcomes, right? Playing those guys that have the upside to hit two home runs, but it doesn't happen often, and you want them in your lineup when it does, those kinds of guys. So that is the first thing I would do. And on a three-game slate, again, it's going to be your default slider is going to be close to that anyway. You will see a significant impact on like a 12-game slate where the default sliders might be something like this. Changing this to 10 will have a huge impact overall. From there, I would also recommend, especially if you're editing exposures a lot and running into issues in the build screen, I would also increase your pool size, right? You may already be doing this, but bump that up to 1,500 and build. That'll give you a much bigger pool. It'll make you have a much more flexible pool of lineups to work with in step three. If that does not work, I would set a maximum exposure here, right? Say I want to cap any exposure to any one player, and this will be in your entire pool of lineups to 50%, right? So this will help a lot, you know, with alleviating those issues where, you know, it's hard to fade or get off of somebody in your lineup pool. So those three things, cranking sim variance, increasing your pool size, and setting a max exposure if you need one, should have a pretty significant impact on your diversity of your lineups. I also think you could consider increasing your min uniques. I wouldn't go crazy with this. I would experiment with two, maybe three, and see what impact that has. If you are increasing your sim variance slider, increasing your pool size, increasing min uniques, and setting a max exposure and still running into issues on step three, it is probably that your strategy for the slate that night or your approach that you want to take for the slate last night just straight up disagrees with the projections, like flatly disagrees with the sims. And at that point, I would probably make some adjustments to the projections overall and maybe knock down the teams or players that you don't want as much of and bump up the teams or players that you do want more of so that we can build you a more receptive pool on the build screen. But I would guess in like 90% of situations, you can just find yourself playing a naturally more diversified set of lineups by doing those settings changes. So Rogue said, just adding to the conversation, as a newer player playing the dime contest with $10 for 100 lineups versus the quarter jukebox for $5.20, the experience is awesome. Learned a lot so far. I think that's also a really good point. There's no better way to cheaply get the experience of what it feels like to build a large number of lineups than the dimes. So, if you're paying attention, you can get 100 lineups in play for $10, and you can't do that anywhere else. Not on DraftKings. So, but FanDuel does have a 5 cent 150 max, $7.50 to max it out. That is the cheapest way to get 150 lineups in play on any site. So if you want to get the feeling for 150, FanDuel is a good one. It's a tough contest to win because you are competing with an enormous number of lineups. But it's super soft. It overlays constantly. And I think it's a pretty decent beginner contest. So HC said, I've been trying quarters to MME since I'm mostly a single entry player. I want to be Jordan someday. Yeah, honestly, I think a little bit's in your head, man. The bridge from single entry to multi-entry, I think, isn't as hard as people think, especially with a tool like SaberSim, right? Ryan said, I tried it by capping the exposures really low in order to get a wider range of different stacks, but that doesn't seem to be what I'm looking for. I'll try that. Yeah, so I would make the max exposure adjustment like the last thing you do. I would experiment with a really high sim variance and a much bigger pool size first. I would try those two things first. I can tell you my strategy in most sports, especially when I'm playing 150, involves a very, very large, or sorry, a very diversified player pool. I have exposure to a lot of players. I'm generally not very heavily exposed to any one player. And I personally have found that just sim variance at 10, pool size of 1,500, lets me do virtually anything I want to do. But if you, that doesn't mean it's going to do everything that you want to do. So I would start there from there. And if you want more diversity, then jump out into these other options here. So, cool. All right. Cool. Any other questions for me here? I don't see anything else coming in. But looking forward to tomorrow's slate already. Should be a big one, like kind of one of those marquee DFS Friday slates. The contests are pretty big. They've been running satellites for some of the contests that are running tomorrow. So I know we're getting a big grand slam on FanDuel, like probably a $44 or a $33. They're running one of the giant grand slams. I won some tickets to that. Looking forward to playing that. But HC said, what's a good player pool number to have for a 20 max? That's another thing where I think, you know, I don't like heuristics in this case. I don't like rules of thumb that are like have 20 or 30 or 40 guys in your player pool. Personally, I think that's a relic from traditional optimizers where you have to curate a player pool or you'll end up with just not great upside plays there in your pool. So I would say it's going to depend on the slate a bit, both in the size of the slate and also the context of the slate, right? If there are two spectacular pitchers up top, a lot of times you'll end up with a smaller player pool just because you'll maybe only be playing two or four pitchers or something like that, right? If there's terrible pitching options and you're spreading out a bunch, you'll end up with a much bigger player pool. So I don't even focus on it, to be completely honest. Like, first of all, I don't do a lot of player pool curation in step one. And in step three, I'm never targeting a particular number of players in my pool. I end up playing more diversified than most, I think. So I will likely have a bigger number than you will. But a lot of it's going to be slate dependent, slate contextualized, et cetera. So I'm curious what we have tonight here on a random three gamer here. So 41 players in my pool. I wouldn't look at a number like this and think, oh, I need to make that bigger or smaller arbitrarily. I'm fine with however many players I have in my pool. So, but cool. All right. Brad says Scherzer's out 6 to 8 weeks. How very Mets. No DeGrom, no Scherzer. But all right, cool. I don't see any other questions coming in here, so we'll go ahead and let it go there. I will be right back here again tomorrow at 2 p.m. Eastern. If you've been watching this or listening along here and you haven't already signed up for SaberSim or were signed up with SaberSim in the past, we have a free 7-day trial. SaberSim.com. You can sign up. Get signed up. Come check us out for free for the next 7 days. I will see you guys all here tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And good luck on this little mini three gamer tonight. And see you later. Take care.